Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Hollywood Crime Scene. This is Rachel Fisher.
Hi, this is Desi Jadakin.
Do you want to do Patreon this week?
Sure, I have it open. So we would like to thank the people who subscribe to our Patreon. They subscribed over at patreon.com/HollywoodCrimeScene, where they get access to early or ad-free episodes, bonus content, a whole other show that we do on Patreon only, our after show, a lot of stuff. Someone asked, what do we get on Patreon in our live Spotify Live last night?
And
get a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So let's thank these people. We have Jane, Megan, Vicky, Nini, Angie, Angela, Megan, Patrice, Christine, Helene, Emily, Lynn, Allison, Rachel, Olivia, Ashley, Amber, Megan, a lot of Megans, Trish, Louise, Christine, Corinne, Jane, Alex, and Laura.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Desi. This week, we're going to be talking about a Los Angeles institution, the Chateau Marmont. Now, this is an episode that we are only going to scratch the surface of today because we're not going to do a traditional multi-part episode where we do another Chateau episode next week, but this will be a multi-part series that will span, like, periodically. We'll revisit this because there's just too many stories to tell. Sort of like I was trying to explain it to you in the vein of how we've done multiple Disneyland episodes, multiple Food Network episodes.
Look, I get what you're doing.
But what if people don't get what I'm doing? I just need to say that up top because I don't want someone to say, like, well, you left out this entire.
There'll be
more stories coming down the pike. I'm telling the story of the Chateau Marmont from the 20s until the end of the 50s. That's what we're doing here today.
Okay.
I said bitchy.
So don't even fucking ask for a 60s story.
Don't even fucking at reply me and being like, why didn't you bring up Lindsay Lohan? That's coming, just not today.
You can, however, bring up any story she forgets from the 20s to the 50s.
You better not. Now, my main source for this episode is a book called The Castle on Sunset by Sean Levy. It's a great book. Let's get into it. The Chateau Marmont has been a Los Angeles institution for decades. The hotel has long been the subject of gossip columns and newspapers for a variety of celebrity-related shenanigans. But most recently it made the news when a number of celebrities crossed a picket line to attend Jay-Z and Beyoncé's post-Oscar bash in March of this year. According to the labor union Unite Here's website, quote, in March 2020, the famed Chateau Marmont fired virtually its entire workforce. Workers who dedicated decades of their lives to the hotel were left without job security or affordable health care in the middle of the pandemic. In response, the Chateau workers successfully organized to help win a path-breaking city law to ensure that hospitality workers can return to their jobs as the crisis subsides without fear of favoritism or discrimination. Many of the hotel workers have since spoken out about abuses they experienced working at the hotel, including disrespect, mistreatment, and a racially stratified workplace. Now, in September of 2020, The Hollywood Reporter published an explosive article detailing the hotel's mistreatment of its staff. Have you read this piece?
No.
It's wild. I mean, I'm not going to get into all of it here, but it is a very explosive article. This is a quote from it. Employees allege that the Chateau has been a workplace rife with toxic behavior, including neglectful management and unaddressed racial discrimination and sexual misconduct. They contend that the hotel's tagline aimed at its privileged guests, always a safe haven, doesn't extend to those who tend to those guests. There are several complaints of sexual harassment and racial discrimination from former workers. One instance mentioned in the Hollywood Reporter article says, Sonia Molina Sanchez, a Chateau housekeeper for the past decade, tells of an incident 6 years ago in which a male guest began masturbating while she was cleaning his room.
Oh my God.
She reported what happened to her manager, hoping the man would be barred from the hotel. However, the guest continued to visit.
Louis C.K.
I mean, maybe.
Because it had to be someone powerful, right?
I mean, obviously, this is like a powerful person. Like,
so
they
gross.
Just, so gross. Now, the Chateau is currently owned by hotelier Andre Balaz. According to the Hollywood Reporter article, quote, staffers say that for years during Balaz's stay at the Chateau, he became heavily intoxicated and openly used illegal drugs in the restaurant and lobby in view of guests. Quote, he'd be out in the garden with friends and they'd be snorting cocaine off their dinner plates, notes one member of the restaurant team. We all saw it. Balaz declined to comment on the matter. While his alleged immoderation affected his employees, resulting in erratic, rageful, and impulsive behavior directed at low-level staff as well as managers, quote, it's like having an alcoholic, drug-addicted father, but it's your CEO, an employee explains. He also hurts himself. Staffers recall repeated instances when Balaz injured himself in falls, resulting on one occasion in a large bruise to his face and on another in an arm being confined to a sling. So this guy's a party animal.
Yeah. I mean, I remember he's dated a lot of movie stars.
He
was with Uma Thurman for a while, I think, and maybe a few others.
A lot of famous women.
Yeah.
Balaz himself has been accused of sexual misconduct multiple times. A former worker accused him of inappropriate touching and groping. He actually assaulted an actress named Amanda Anka. She said that he grabbed her crotch at his London hotel, the Chiltern Firehouse, at the premiere party for Horrible Bosses 2. Her husband is Jason Bateman. And Jason Bateman was among a number of witnesses who saw him grab her crotch.
Oh.
Jason Bateman responded by spitting his gum in Balaz's face.
Whoa.
And then they made a statement about it. They're like, yeah. He's disgusting. So the union organization Unite Here, they ask the public support in signing a pledge, and their pledge says this: I vow to only return to the Chateau Marmont when the hotel has demonstrated a commitment to respecting its workers' years of service by rehiring them in accordance with their legal rights and to ensuring that all workers, regardless of their race, sex, or background, feel treated with dignity and respect. So, although I said up top this episode we were mostly going to be talking about the early days of the Chateau, I felt it's pertinent to mention what's going on today.
Of course.
Right now, because this is very recent news.
I remember the Jay-Z thing.
The Oscars.
That just happened, yeah. People were like furious.
I mean, it was pretty wild because there were a few celebrities who attended the Oscars bash and they're like, I didn't know. But I don't know how they didn't know because I've seen footage from the outside of the Chateau, which is where you enter, and it's like there were like dozens of, I mean, I don't know how many exactly.
But protesting that night?
Yes.
Okay. Like, so they passed protesters. I could see not knowing and just showing up there. But if they're actually passing protesters.
It was a literal picket line that they crossed. So, and that was like just a month ago that happened. So anyway, let's go back 100 years ago, where it all began. It was 1926 when Los Angeles lawyer Fred Horowitz envisioned constructing a castle on a hillside off Sunset and West Hollywood. Horowitz became inspired on a trip to France when he visited Chateau d'Amboise. a castle dating back to the 11th century that had been home to many kings over the years. He envisioned building a similar property, a grand Gothic structure with turrets, right here in Los Angeles, in a location that at the time was still mostly bare, save for some mansions that dotted the hillside. Further to the west was the newly built Sunset Plaza and a few restaurants, notably the Russian Eagle and La Boheme. Both of these establishments were known to serve illegal liquor during Prohibition. This patch of land on Sunset near Laurel was at the time untapped. During the 1920s, the stretch of Sunset between Laurel and Doheny would become known as the Sunset Strip. It was a hedonistic paradise, offering gambling joints, brothels, and booze in the then unincorporated West Hollywood. Horowitz planned for his chateau to serve as a luxury apartment building, standing 7 feet tall and boasting earthquake-proof construction.
7 feet tall?
7 stories tall.
Oh, it's like, that's not that impressive.
I'm so sorry. I even wrote it down here, 7 feet tall. So I knew what I meant.
Yeah.
7 stories tall and boasting an earthquake-proof construction. Erecting the castle would be a big undertaking and require a lot of money. So he enlisted the help of 3 wealthy acquaintances to help him finance the project. Florence Dean was actually the owner of the plot of land that Horowitz wanted to build on. He offered her a share of the building for her help. He also enlisted socialite Inez Fredericks and fellow lawyer Mabel Willebrandt as investors. Mabel had served under President Harding as Assistant Attorney General, and she was an enforcer of the 18th Amendment. She became derisively known as Deborah of the Dries and Prohibition Portia.
Ooh.
It's kind of like the barbecue Becky of the day.
Deborah of the Dries.
We're like, this bitch.
Yeah, she's annoying.
Although Mabel was initially skeptical of Horowitz's plans, she agreed to help with the project. In total, these 3 girl bosses invested $350,000 towards building the chateau. The following year, Fred Horowitz employed architects Arnold Weitzman and William Douglas Lee to help bring his Gothic castle to life. The plans for the chateau included 43 rooms, a garden with a fountain, a lounge, a communal kitchen, and an underground garage with room for 26 cars. In the spring of 1928, construction began. The building was nearly completed in January of 1929 when Horowitz decided on a name, Chateau Marmont. This was, of course, named after the small street on which the castle resided at the intersection of Sunset.
And Marmont?
It's Sunset and Marmont. It's a very, very tiny street.
Yes.
It's like a little bullshit street.
Yeah, I've driven on it.
It's so small that I honestly thought that the hotel came before the street name.
Yeah, because it just seems like it's a way to access the hotel.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it was for.
That's what it's named after, is that street. Just prior to its official opening, Mabel Willebrandt hosted a party celebrating the appointment of Judge May Leahy to the Municipal Court of Los Angeles. She was the 2nd woman on the L.A. County bench. 300 guests attended. The chateau opened for business in February of 1929. And a newspaper ad for the apartment building said, one to six room furnished apartments, including complete 24-hour room service and garage in basement. Large rooms and private balconies, distinctively furnished and decorated. View of Mount Baldy, Catalina Island, and the lights of the city from private balconies and patios. Finest steel and concrete construction, fire and earthquake proof. Though much of the chateau was extravagant, some potential renters were unimpressed by the furniture that came with the rooms. They noted its relative cheapness compared to the prices they were asked to pay.
Oh.
Like, people would come in and be like, who designed this? Like, who picked out the furniture? It sucks ass.
This is from Home Goods.
It literally was kind of like on that level where it was like, this is basic. I'm not going to pay this much money a month to live here if I'm getting this basic ass furniture.
Marriott shit.
Yeah, it just wasn't that stylish, and like, it was basic.
Well, it definitely has a style now.
Yes, and we'll get into that evolution for sure. So the most expensive penthouse, which boasted 3,800 square feet, cost $750 a month to rent. In today's money, that's about $12,600.
I would love to see some of the rooms.
Back then?
And just in general now, I've never been to any of the rooms.
Yeah, I haven't either. I have like gone there a handful of times in my life to like party or
I've been in that record room, the lounge, I guess, on the lower level.
We had lunch there a few years ago.
Yeah, that's like where whenever I've gone there, I've always gone to that area.
Yeah.
And I've been on the outside patio too.
Like I went there when I was a teenager, like to the bar and stuff and like to have coffee sometimes. But yeah. Now that I think about it, I've never seen any of the rooms inside. I've never even been.
No, I haven't either.
I would like to see
that. I
want
to see them too.
The chateau was not an instant money-making success. It took a while to fill the rooms. And when the stock market crashed that fall, many of the tenants that they did have had to break their leases. So this is like kind of a shitty time for it to be open. By 1930, investor Mabel Willebrand urged Fred Horowitz to cut his losses and sell the chateau. But Horowitz wasn't ready to give up. Instead, he hired a new operational manager, a hotelier named Ben Weingart. Ben fired the current manager and hired a woman named Emma Lovell, who he would spend long hours with in one of the penthouse suites several times a week.
So he hired.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to fire the current manager and hire this hot chick. Presumably they were fucking, as Ben was known as a slut, despite him being married with kids. But despite Ben Weingart's efforts, 2 years in, the chateau was still only partially occupied. Fred Horowitz was ready to sell. In October of 1932, the property sold to Albert Smith for $750,000. Smith had plans to turn the chateau into a hotel that offered long-term stays. He's like, this isn't an apartment building.
Yeah.
It's a hotel. He hired former silent film actress Ann Little as the manager. Billy Wilder would go on to say that Ann, quote, was why the hotel became what it became.
Oh.
Let's take a quick break here.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm a huge fan of Rocket Money. Not only did they help me find and cancel some of my unwanted subscriptions, in general, they've given me a great picture of my financial status and helped me save money. I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I love the dashboard that shows me this month's spending compared to last month's, so I can clearly see my spending habits. Plus, they'll help me create a custom budget and keep my spending on track. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene. That's rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene. rocketmoney.com/Hollywood Crime Scene.
I'm a huge fan of cashmere, and that can be a very expensive habit. That's why I was so excited to find Quince. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I am absolutely living in my black cashmere mini dress, and to be honest, I want to buy like three more because I can't imagine my life without them. So indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/Hollywood for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Hollywood to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/Hollywood.
So Anne Little, who was the new manager of the chateau, moved into one of the hotel's suites with her mother. She then worked to make over the interior design of the building, noting that the furniture was tacky and needed to be replaced.
Did you see pictures of the furniture, the early?
I didn't, because I didn't look.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I was going to...
Just curious.
I didn't even Google that. Usually I'm like Googling pictures all throughout working on an episode. And you know what? I was just so dead set on getting this done. I didn't even do that.
Well, because it's not like today certain hotels have that very cheap furniture that they all have.
Right.
I'm just curious what cheap meant back then. Do you know what I mean?
Like, right. It just wasn't, good. Beautiful furniture was acquired from luxury estate sales. An eclectic mix of pieces decorated each room. So that became sort of the signature, was like,
yeah,
this furniture is going to be beautiful, but it's also going to be very eclectic.
It wasn't mass produced. It was all sort of handpicked from estate sales.
Handpicked, antique, nice quality, and no two rooms were alike.
Yeah.
And that lended to this
bohemian
yeah. artsy aura to the place. Anne also hired a European chef to cater to the guests' whims. There wouldn't be a formal dining room, but there would be a sort of room service. Not only did Anne Little have a flair for design and hospitality, she was also very connected. She attracted fellow film actors and artists who would wind up populating the chateau for many years to come. By the early 30s, the Sunset Strip was home to celebrity hotspot, the nightclub, the Trocadero, as well as Schwab's drugstore, where Lana Turner was famously discovered. Across the street from the chateau was the Garden of Allah, which was a hotel owned by Russian film actress Alla Nazimova that attracted a variety of celebrity clientele and was known for its debauchery. We're going to do a separate episode for her.
Oh, that sounds good.
And for this hotel, because this was the chateau before the chateau.
Okay.
Still, at this time, the Chateau Marmont did not yet carry the glamour or the cachet of the other celebrity-frequented hotels of West Hollywood and Beverly Hills. Its patrons were wealthy, but they were mostly society folks and not celebrities. So it just wasn't like the celebrity destination yet. But in 1933, Jean Harlow and her husband Harold Rawson moved into the chateau. The newlyweds were seeking a new place to live after growing tired of living in Jean's Bel Air home with her overbearing mother. The couple occupied two suites at the chateau that connected through a hallway. Jean redecorated with all-white furnishings, as was her style. But unfortunately for Jean and Harold, they could not escape their mother, or her mother, as she was a frequent visitor at the chateau. She's like, oh, well, this is where you're
Jean!
Living. Jean! She went by Mother Jean, because her name was also Jean.
Ugh. Those overbearing moms are so irritating.
She was very... This was an irritating
mother. I just picture her as, you know, in It's a Wonderful Life, the mother of Mary.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
That's who she was, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
In my imagination.
When she's like on the phone.
Yeah. She's listening in.
Sam Wainwright's on the phone.
Add that to the constant parade of hairdressers, reporters, photographers, etc., that were there to attend Jean Harlow. This was hardly a private living situation. When Harold Rawson was away, hotel staff noticed a number of male visitors coming and going from Jean's apartment at all hours of the night. In fact, the housekeepers noticed that Jean and her husband rarely slept at the Marmont on the same nights.
Hmm.
They also noticed that Harold had been sleeping in a Murphy bed in the living room.
Oh, shit.
So they're like, well, like, even though they weren't spending the night together, it seems like he was sleeping in this Murphy bed. Like, he wouldn't even sleep in her. Like, she had the whole bed to herself.
Yeah, that's my bed.
You sleep in the shitty.
Sleep in the Murphy bed. You can put it up at in the morning.
Yeah. I honestly have an irrational fear of Murphy beds because I always think I'm going to be, like, goofy where I sleep in it and it flies up.
Have you ever even had the opportunity
Never.
To sleep in a Murphy bed?
Never in my life. I don't even, do they even still make those anymore?
I feel like they purely existed for gags
yeah.
in movies and cartoons.
Yeah.
Boing.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean,
I have a fear of them.
Although I do feel like I've seen them a little bit lately now where it's like
it's micro
for your
living.
Studio, yeah, apartment, micro living.
Right. In October of that year, Jean was rushed to the hospital for an acute case of appendicitis. Following her recovery, Jean went back to Bel Air to live with her mother. Her marriage was effectively over. When Harold and Jean moved out of the chateau in January the next year, news of the couple's split put the hotel on the map of celebrity destinations. Because they're like, they moved out of the Chateau Marmont.
Yeah. What's that?
Not only that, but compared to the Garden of Allah, the Chateau Marmont was relatively insulated from gossip. It offered more privacy for celebrities to go buck wild, and that in turn attracted more celebrity clientele.
Mm.
Harry Cohn was among a handful of studio execs who kept suites on retainer for the stars.
Oh.
Like, you want to go act a fool.
Here you go.
You go stay at the Chateau Marmont. Billy Wilder first stayed at the Chateau in 1934, staying in a small room that he spent a lot of time writing in. And little recalled him working late into the night. When he left for Vienna to try and get his mother to flee, urging her to come with him to Hollywood, unfortunately, she didn't move.
Oh.
I don't know what happened to the mom,
yeah,
but I hope she got out. So he ends up returning to the chateau later that year, but he was dismayed to learn that there were no rooms available. He told Anne Little at the front desk that he would stay in a bathroom before he stayed anywhere else.
Wow.
So he did stay in a bathroom.
At the chateau.
Yeah. He moved into the ladies' room in the lobby. I don't know how this worked, but this was like a story he told people for years. He's like, I lived in the ladies' room.
I feel like there's more to this story.
100%. Like, he might have camped out next to the ladies'
yeah.
room, but he.
Or it was like this big, huge waiting room that they closed off or something.
He wasn't even really that famous at this point.
Oh.
I mean, he wasn't that big.
Yeah.
He was famous, but he wasn't like.
Who he became.
Who he became, right? 1934. So he says that he stayed in the ladies' room. It was only for a few days. He would go on to tell tales of this unusual temporary living situation, saying it was a small room, but it had 6 toilets. I don't know how that works out logistically. People coming and going.
Like, I'm just imagining the women walking in and he's like on his typewriter.
Yeah.
Don't mind me.
Wilder stays at the chateau would be referenced in his films, notably in 1944's Double Indemnity. In 1937, the chateau upped its level of privacy by building bungalows on the hillside behind the property. The ad that ran in the newspaper read, "Charming, secluded hillside homes with the complete 24-hour hotel service, which has always been an outstanding feature of Chateau Marmont." By 1942, the chateau came under new ownership. Erwin Brettauer. He was a German banker who also happened to be an anti-fascist, and he purchased the place. Brettauer embraced the hotel as a haven for private debauchery, but also for tolerance that wasn't embraced at more famous hotels. Chateau guest Howard Hughes was not fond of Brettauer's decision to hire black employees or his decision to allow black guests to stay there. Huh. Look, Howard Hughes, he sucks. He was a fucking freak.
I mean, he did this with Ava Gardner, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Hughes, of course, at this time was known for his odd behavior. He was known for his being a freak while he stayed in their penthouse suite. He ate an insane amount of ice cream.
Ooh.
I don't think that's that weird, but maybe like it was like really an insane amount.
Yeah, I'm going to need to hear the numbers.
Like, I feel like if that was one of the weird things he did,
that's like not even in the top 100 weird things that he did, I think.
No, that he did. But I mean, if that's like it must have been a really like a lot.
Yeah.
He also shuffled around looking disheveled. He was always unbathed, unshaven.
It's weird how early that stuff happened.
Yeah.
You kind of always think it happened later, but it was always there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they were like, this guy, he's rich, but he's weird.
He stinks. He's a real skank.
He's a fucking skank. When the chateau finally installed a swimming pool, he liked to peer from his window with binoculars to watch the sunbathers down below. I would be so upset if I looked up and saw Howard Hughes staring at me through binoculars.
And his dirty t-shirt.
I thought
you were going to say he used it for his bath. Like,
yeah,
like that's how he bathed. Like he'd go in the pool.
Cannonball.
Scrubbing.
The pool was definitely a cruising ground for both queer and straight clientele. Closeted actors could freely congregate at the chateau's pool without fear of judgment or publicity. Roddy McDowell, the English actor, was a client of Scotty Bowers.
Ooh.
According to Scotty, Roddy loved doing paupers and fucking men in his suite at the chateau.
Nice.
I honestly would like to know the history of paupers because I didn't even know they had them back then.
I know. It seems like very 70s.
And today.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, yeah, I can't picture it in that. Like, I would love to know the history of paupers too.
Yeah. That's a part of queer history that I feel like needs to be recognized.
I've just always known about it. It's always been there.
But I'd like to know when it's
or
started.
Like who was the first person to try it? That's yeah. Always an interesting.
Who figured it out?
Who's like, you know what? Really loosens things up.
Another man who used Scotty Bowers' services during his stay at the chateau was Gore Vidal.
Is this during the 30s?
40s.
Oh, 40s.
This is like 40s okay. And 50s.
Okay.
Anthony Perkins and Tab Hunter, they began their romance at the chateau pool.
Ooh.
Even the mere act of a celebrity checking into the Chateau Marmont might mean that their marriage was on the rocks. Like by this point, they're like, uh-oh.
That's where people go to stay when they need to get out of the house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Desi Arnaz frequented the hotel during arguments with his wife, Lucille Ball. When she would discover that he'd been unfaithful, he'd show up at the chateau. Guests at the hotel remembered him getting drunk and acting like a dick. There was one instance at the hotel where both Desi and Lucy were together, squabbling on a terrace. The fight ended with a briefcase full of cash being flung over the ledge and spilling out onto Sunset Boulevard.
Why?
I have no idea why they
What was that about? Like there's some drug dealers or something.
Right. I have no clue. Nicholas Ray spent 6 years living at the Chateau Marmont following the discovery of his wife, Gloria Graham, sleeping with his 13-year-old son.
You got to leave the house when that happens.
Now, if you'd like to know more about that story, we have covered it.
Yeah, that's in the Rebel Without a Cause episodes, I'm pretty sure.
We didn't do an entire episode to Gloria Graham?
No, I did two parts on Rebel Without a Cause.
Oh.
And not including Natalie Wood. She was right. her own two parts.
Right.
So that was Gloria Graham, Nicholas Ray, and James Dean, and like right. a few other things.
Well, he wrote Rebel at the Chateau.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Look, that's like after this breakup, sometimes you make your best art after you discover your wife is fucking your 13-year-old son.
It's not, it doesn't justify it, but.
But sometimes you make your, that's when you make your best work. Wild story. Absolutely wild yeah. story. Okay, so in the 1950s, Rip Torn was a frequent guest at the Chateau.
Did he get drunk there?
I'm sure he did. He was known, however, for going up into the surrounding hills and hunting quail and pigeons.
Really?
Because he cooked them for dinner. He'd take
at the Chateau?
At the Chateau. Like, he'd go up in the Hollywood Hills, and he'd shoot quail and pigeon. I didn't even know there was quail in the Hollywood Hills.
Isn't pigeon like squab or yeah, something?
Yeah, it's squab. Squab is fancy pigeon.
Yeah.
So then he would take these birds back to his hotel room and have, like, dinner parties.
So he, like, did he send them down to the chef and, like, make something with this?
I think he did it himself.
Wow.
I think, and Miles Davis was one of his dinner guests.
I think that's what's sort of interesting about the Chateau is that people who do live there more long-term kind of have the run of the place almost as if it's their personal home.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because like, your suites would have a kitchen in it.
Ooh, nice.
So they could just cook their meals, like, but you could get the chef to be like, hey, can you, like, you could, or you could get people to be like, bring you a hamburger meat or whatever.
Can I borrow a cup of sugar?
Yeah, I'm sure like, it was like convenient for shit like that.
Yeah.
Montgomery Clift carried out an affair with actress Libby Holman at the Chateau while he was in the middle of shooting the film Red River. The romance eventually ended, but Clift returned to the Chateau again in 1956 alone following his near-fatal car crash. Clift was driving home after leaving a dinner party in Beverly Hills hosted by his co-star, Elizabeth Taylor, when he fell asleep at the wheel and crashed head-on into a telephone pole. He was in the hospital for months, suffering from a broken face and sinus injuries. I mean,
I've spent very long amount of time looking at before-after pictures of Montgomery Clift.
He really did a number on his face. It's really sad.
I mean, he's
sad.
Such an interesting story. Maybe we can cover him at some point.
We should.
Because he has a very sad life.
Very, very sad story. Uh-huh. So this is a really tragic accident that he's in. His face is really messed up. This is a very long recovery process. So he checks into the Chateau after he's discharged from the hospital. During the duration of his stay, he hung a do not disturb sign on the door and he told the front desk that no one call him, especially his mother. He spent the next several weeks drinking and taking pills inside a darkened room, shades drawn, even removing the light bulbs. This is not a good situation. He would get so drunk that sometimes he would wander around the halls. One time he banged on the door of another guest hollering, "Libby!" And that wasn't the worst of it. Because another night he was discovered by a neighbor butt naked on the terrace shouting into the night.
Wow.
Like not even a neighbor who lived in the hotel, like a neighbor who lived like on like off of Sunset.
Okay.
It was like, why is Montgomery Clift naked?
I mean, that's got to be a perk of living in that neighborhood.
Shelley Winters and her third husband, Anthony Franciosa.
Oh, we know him.
We do. They were frequent guests of the hotel. Before they were married, they stayed at the hotel and fucked a lot. According to Shelley, if there had been an Olympic sex team, Tony would have been the captain.
That's why she put up with his bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. Tony would eventually move into Shelley's Beverly Hills home after they married. Later, during the filming of Tony's 1957 film, Wild as the Wind, his attractive Italian co-star, Anna Magnani, was staying at the Chateau. Anna was famous for cooking elaborate Italian meals and filling the hallways with tempting aromas.
Ugh, I bet you she cooked such good Italian food.
Yeah. One night, while Shelley was at home cooking her own dinner, she noticed that her husband was running awfully late from the studio. So she called the studio and was like, when's Tony wrapped? And they were like, he left hours ago.
Uh-oh.
And she knew that he was at the chateau. God damn it. So Shelley was furious, and she grabbed a statue from the mantel place in their living room, got in the car, and drove to the Chateau Marmont. She knew that that's where her husband must be. Shelley marched up to Anna She got Anna Magnini's suite number, or she asked where her husband was, and they're like, oh, he's with Anna Magnini in her suite. So she marches up to this suite, burst through the doors, and saw Anna in the arms of her husband. Shelley screamed, "Putana!"
That means whore.
I'm guessing. Then she started waving the statue around and chasing her around the room with it, out into the hallway, threatening to clock her with it.
I like that she had the foresight to pick up that statue on her way out. Like, she's in a red hot rage.
But she
picks, she like goes out the door and she like stops for a second, goes back and picks up the statue.
Yeah, she's like, better grab a weapon.
Yeah. I mean, that's like some rage insight. You're like, I'm going to need this.
Just in case. According to Shelley, her and Anna made it down the stairs but stopped on the third landing. Both of them started bursting into laughter because they're like, this is fucking stupid. Tony then explained that we were just rehearsing a scene. And Shelley believed it. And she was like, okay. And she said after that incident, Tony came home promptly at 6:15 p.m. every night.
She really had to work hard to keep him in line.
Yeah.
So it does make sense that he had a good dick game.
Right.
Because, like, why else would you put up with this?
He must have been the captain.
He must have been fucking every co-star he had.
Right. Poor Shelley Winters. Yeah. Come on. She was a brilliant actress.
Very.
Betty Davis stayed at the chateau a number of times in the 50s with her then-husband, Gary Merrill. Fellow guests at the hotel recalled hearing the couple screaming at each other all the time. Like, whenever they'd be there together, it would just be... You don't want to be on Betty Davis's...
She had very volatile marriages.
You don't want to be on her bad side. You don't necessarily want to be married to Betty Davis.
Look, they couldn't handle her.
No one could handle her.
No one could handle her. Rare. Especially her husbands. Oh, like my God.
So, but Betty's probably her most memorable incident at the chateau came in 1958 when she fell asleep in her bungalow with a lit cigarette.
That has to have happened hundreds of times in her life.
Hundreds.
There's no way. She's probably almost died that way.
Several times. Yeah, like, several. Like, yeah.
No one smoked more.
No.
No.
So she falls asleep with a lit cigarette. The actor Lou Jacoby, who was staying in the bungalow next to Betty's, saw smoke pouring from her bungalow and was like,
Should I say something? Don't want to piss her off.
Yeah, because like, what if she got mad? Woke her up. So he alerted the staff, and the entire hotel had to be evacuated.
Damn. That's the other thing I would love to see, those bungalows.
Yeah.
I have never been.
I've never been at the bungalows. Anyway, that's our early days stories of the chateau. There are other stories that we'll get to at another point in time, but... After so many weeks of murder,
a little light Hollywood gossip.
We had to keep this relatively light.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's very interesting. I honestly did not know anything about the history of this place.
Yeah.
It's obviously so famous. And I do remember the first time I went, I wasn't a teenager, I was older. So it was kind of like, I just had never been there because if you don't know LA, it's like, there's nowhere to park around there. Like, it's not like an easy place to necessarily go to.
Yeah.
Like, you're going there if you're over there. You can't just park somewhere and walk over. And it's kind of intimidating to enter, too, because you have to walk up that weird
hill
into the sort of where the cars pull in.
Yeah.
So you don't want to just pop in. You know what I mean? Like,
the Sunset Strip is weird because, like, it is like a lot of shit on the stretch between Laurel and Doheny, but it's not walkable.
Yeah. It's like a weird, it's there's like, so much stuff there, but you have to drive between them or something.
Anyway, we will eventually tell more stories. Obviously, there's plenty of more modern stories to tell.
Yeah.
Like from the 2000s. as well as some interesting stuff from the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Yes, I bet there is.
Yeah. This book is, I like this book. It's
interesting. I've seen this book. I don't think I knew exactly what it was. I've seen the title though, for sure. No, I like these kind of books.
Yeah.
Where it's like a hodgepodge of all these different stories, et cetera.
But I definitely want to get a book about the Garden of Allah because like
I know was, that sounds, I was like, that's where I want to go.
Yeah.
Who's Allah?
Well, Allah was named after Allah.
I know who it is, but who is she? Like, she seems crazy.
She was this like queer Russian Jewish actress from back in the day.
Yeah.
And she has a very interesting story as well. And she opened this like hotel that used to be her house. But she turned it into a hotel.
Okay.
And it was just debauchery 24/7.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it sounds really fun. Like there was definitely a lot of gay sex happening there.
Okay.
So we'll get into that another time.
Nice.
That's a future episode for sure.
Okay.
Anyway, we're going to do our after show and we'll see you all later this week for the mini episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.